Welcome to your deep dive on negotiation.
But not your typical negotiation tactics.
Right, not the usual kind of win-win stuff you see everywhere.
Exactly, more like a deep dive into the FBI playbook.
Yeah, we're going to crack open Never Split the Difference.
By Chris Voss.
A former FBI hostage negotiator.
That's right.
Which is really fascinating because it's not just about boardrooms, you know, or like high-stakes business deals.
It's about understanding the human psychology behind getting what you want, whether the stakes are life or death or just like getting a better price on a car or something.
Right. And that's actually what really caught my eye in the excerpts you sent over.
Oh, yeah.
This whole idea of getting someone to say no can actually be a good thing.
Yeah.
Even the key to unlocking a yes later on.
It's interesting, right?
It is counterintuitive.
Because we're so conditioned to think of no as like a dead end.
Totally.
But Voss actually argues that forcing a quick yes can totally backfire.
Awesome.
Well, it might just be compliance, you know, not real agreement.
Oh, I see.
Which could lead to problems down the line.
Right.
Whereas a genuine no early on can establish boundaries, give the other person a sense of control, and open up a more honest dialogue.
So it's more about creating that safe space.
Yeah.
Where people feel comfortable actually pushing back.
Exactly.
And expressing their reservations.
That's it.
Instead of just feeling pressured to say yes.
Think about it. Like, when was the last time you felt good about saying yes to a pushy salesperson or a telemarketer?
Never.
Who won't take no for an answer.
You just want to get off the phone as quickly as possible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But when you invite no into the conversation, you're signaling respect for their boundaries and their right to disagree.
Right.
And that builds trust, which is essential for any successful negotiation.
That's so interesting. And he actually gives that great example.
Oh, yeah.
Of a political fundraiser who totally changed his pitch around.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of leading with a request for money, he started by acknowledging that people might not be comfortable donating right now. Like, is this a bad time to talk, or do you even care about this cause?
Exactly.
And that worked.
Surprisingly well, because it kind of disarmed potential donors, took the pressure off, made them feel seen and heard.
I see.
And once they felt understood, they were much more open to learning about the cause and even considering a donation.
That's amazing. So it's almost like you're flipping the script.
It is.
On the whole negotiation process.
Yeah.
So how could we use this in real life?
Oh, absolutely.
Let's say I'm trying to negotiate a raise with my boss.
Okay.
How could I use the power of no to my advantage?
Let's try a role play scenario.
Okay.
You be the employee. I'll be the boss. You walk into my office and make your pitch.
All right. Here goes nothing. Hi, boss. I've been working really hard, exceeding expectations on all my projects, and I'd like a 10% raise to reflect that.
I appreciate your hard work, but unfortunately a 10% raise just isn't in the budget right now.
Okay, so most people would probably just feel deflated and accept that no.
Yeah.
But how do I turn this around?
So this is where you lean into the no.
Okay.
Instead of backing down, you acknowledge their statement and probe for more information.
Mm-hmm.
You could say something like, I understand the budget is tight, but are you saying there's absolutely no room for a raise at all? Okay. Or are there other factors at play?
So I'm not accepting the no as a final answer, but rather as a starting point.
Exactly.
For a deeper conversation.
Yeah. By digging deeper, you're inviting your boss to elaborate on the reasons behind the decision.
Right.
They might say something like, well, it's not just about the budget. We also need to see consistent high performance.
Okay.
Over a longer period. And while you've done well on recent projects, your overall performance review this year wasn't as strong.
That gives me an opening to showcase my value and address their concerns.
Exactly.
Okay, so I could say, I see.
Yeah.
So are you saying that if I maintain my current level of performance over the next 2 quarters, then we could revisit the conversation about a raise?
Now you're framing the no as a challenge, a hurdle you can overcome.
Right.
You're not just accepting defeat. You're actively engaging in the negotiation process and demonstrating your commitment to meeting their expectations.
That's so clever.
It is.
I never thought of no as a tool to gain more control in a negotiation.
Right.
But it makes so much sense. You're not just passively accepting the other person's terms. You're actively shaping the conversation.
Exactly. And that brings us to another powerful technique that Voss emphasizes.
Okay.
Tactical empathy.
Tactical empathy.
Yeah.
Is that just a fancy way of saying be nice?
Not quite. It's about going beyond superficial pleasantries.
Yeah.
And genuinely connecting with your counterpart on an emotional level. You're trying to understand their perspective, their fears, and their underlying motivations.
So it's not about being their best friend.
No, not at all.
It's more about understanding their world.
Yeah.
So you could better navigate the negotiation.
Exactly.
So how do you put tactical empathy into practice?
Well, Voss introduces two key tools.
Okay.
Mirroring and labeling. Mirroring is deceptively simple. You just repeat back the last few words of what someone said, but with a questioning tone.
Okay.
This prompts them to elaborate and reveal more information, making them feel heard and encouraging them to continue talking.
So if someone says, I'm really frustrated with this situation,
yeah,
I would respond with, frustrated with this situation.
Exactly. Yeah. It seems basic, but this simple act of mirroring demonstrates that you're actively listening and genuinely interested in their perspective.
And what about labeling?
Labeling takes it a step further by explicitly acknowledging their emotions. You might say, it sounds like you're really frustrated with this situation.
Right.
This validates their feelings and diffuses tension, making them more receptive to your perspective.
I could see how that would be disarming.
Yeah.
It's like you're taking the sting out of their negativity.
Exactly.
By acknowledging it directly.
Yeah. Voss shares a great story about using mirroring to diffuse a tense situation with an airline gate agent.
Oh, really?
He was trying to get on an oversold flight, and the agent was stressed and overwhelmed.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine.
By mirroring her words and reflecting back her frustration, he was able to connect with her on a human level and eventually secure a seat on the flight.
That's amazing how such a simple technique can transform a potentially hostile interaction into a more collaborative one.
Absolutely. And labeling can be equally effective. Imagine a customer yelling at you about a faulty product.
Okay.
Instead of getting defensive, you could say, it sounds like you're incredibly frustrated that this product isn't working as expected.
By labeling their frustration, I'm validating their feelings.
Yeah.
Showing them that I understand their anger.
Yeah.
Which makes it harder for them to stay angry. Right?
Exactly. Once the emotional temperature has cooled down, you can start working towards a resolution.
Okay.
And that's where things get even more interesting. Voss introduces this idea of calibrated questions.
Hold on. Let's actually try a role play scenario with mirroring and labeling first.
Okay.
I want to make sure I'm getting the hang of this.
Right.
I'll be the customer service representative.
Yeah, okay.
And you be the angry customer.
Gotcha.
Let's say you've been on hold for an hour trying to resolve an issue with your internet service.
Okay, game on. This is ridiculous. I've been on hold for an hour. I demand to speak to a supervisor.
It sounds like you're incredibly frustrated with the long wait time. I understand how upsetting that must be.
Okay, so you've labeled my frustration. What next?
Now I'm going to use mirroring to encourage you to elaborate. An hour is a long time to be on hold. What seems to be the issue you're trying to resolve?
My internet has been down for 3 days and I can't get anyone to help me.
3 days with no internet? I can see why you're so frustrated. What have you already tried to fix the problem?
I've restarted my modem and router multiple times. I've checked all the cables. I've even tried calling tech support, but I just get put on hold.
You've tried all the basic troubleshooting steps, and you're still not getting anywhere. It sounds like you're feeling really helpless.
Okay, I am starting to calm down a bit. You're actually listening to me and acknowledging my frustration instead of just giving me the runaround.
And that's the key. By using mirroring and labeling, I've created a space where you feel heard and understood.
Yeah.
And that's crucial for diffusing anger and building rapport, which ultimately paves the way for a successful resolution.
I'm impressed you're a natural at this.
Uh-huh.
These techniques seem so simple.
They do.
Yet they're incredibly powerful when used effectively.
They are. And you mentioned calibrated questions.
Yes. Calibrated questions are all about asking how or what questions that force your counterpart to think through your problem and potentially even come up with solutions themselves. They're incredibly effective because they shift the dynamic. Instead of, you know, making demands or arguing that, you know, you're engaging the other person in a problem-solving process.
So instead of saying, you need to give me a discount,
right?
I could ask, how can we make this work within my budget?
Exactly. That question puts the onus on them to find a solution that benefits both of you.
Right.
It's subtle yet powerful.
Yeah, it's like I'm turning the negotiation into a collaborative brainstorming session.
Precisely. And that approach often leads to more creative and mutually beneficial outcomes. Now, think about those moments when the other side comes out swinging, you know?
Okay.
Maybe even gets aggressive or unreasonable. Voss calls this taking a punch.
Okay, that sounds intense. My instinct would be to punch back.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing that's not the FBI-approved approach?
Not usually. Remember, it's about maintaining control of the conversation, not letting your emotions dictate your actions.
Right.
The first step is to absorb the punch. Don't react defensively or get pulled into an argument. Instead, use labels to acknowledge their anger or frustration.
So I can say something like, it sounds like you're really angry about this.
Exactly. By labeling their emotion, you're diffusing it.
Mm-hmm.
You're showing them that you're not afraid of their anger and that you're still willing to engage.
And once they've calmed down a bit, I can start using those calibrated questions.
Yeah.
To guide the conversation towards a resolution.
Precisely. You could ask something like, what would it take to resolve this situation to your satisfaction?
Okay.
Or how can we move forward in a way that addresses both of our concerns?
It forces them to think constructively instead of just venting their frustration. Voss actually tells this incredible story about a drug dealer who went to the FBI for help because his girlfriend had been kidnapped.
Oh, yes.
By another dealer.
Right. And the FBI negotiators were riding with him.
Oh, wow.
While he was negotiating with the kidnapper over the phone.
That's crazy.
And instead of sticking to the carefully crafted script and asking, you know, a proof of life question, he just blurted out, hey, dog, how do I know she's all right?
It sounds like a rookie mistake.
It does.
But it actually worked out in his favor, right?
The kidnapper, feeling in control, volunteered to put the girlfriend on the phone.
Wow.
He thought he was calling the shots, but in reality, he'd been subtly manipulated by this seemingly naive question.
So sometimes the most effective tactics are the ones that seem the least strategic.
Exactly. And that's a key takeaway from Voss's approach. It's not about rigidly following a script.
Right.
It's about being adaptable, intuitive, and always listening for those subtle cues that can unlock a negotiation.
All right, let's put this into practice with another role play. I'll be the manager and you be the team member. Let's say I need you to work late to finish a crucial project.
Okay, there's no way I can stay late tonight. I have a prior commitment that I absolutely can't miss.
It sounds like you're feeling really stressed about having to stay late. I understand it's not ideal. What's the commitment you have?
I have to pick up my kids from daycare by 6 p.m. There's no one else who can do it.
So you're saying that if we can find a way to get this project done before 6 p.m., then you'd be able to stay and help?
Well, yeah, but I don't see how that's possible. There's still so much work to do.
What if we brought in another team member to help? Would that make a difference?
Maybe. If we had an extra pair of hands, we could probably get it done in time.
Okay, great. Let's see if we can find someone who's available.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be willing to stay until 7 p.m. if we can get someone here to help by 5 p.m.?
Yeah, I could probably make that work.
Perfect. So by using a combination of labeling calibrated questions and a willingness to compromise, we were able to find a solution that works for both of us.
You also uncovered some valuable information in the process. You learned I had a hard deadline, and you used that to tailor your proposal.
Exactly. And that's the beauty of these techniques. They're not just about getting what you want. They're about understanding the other party's needs.
Right.
And finding solutions that satisfy both sides.
And that brings us to another fascinating concept from the book.
Well,
bending reality.
Bending reality.
Yeah, it sounds a bit manipulative.
It does.
But it's really about strategically framing the negotiation to align with your counterpart's worldview and needs.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Tell me more about bending reality.
It's about understanding how people perceive value.
Okay.
And then presenting your offer in a way that makes it seem irresistible.
Mm-hmm.
Think about anchoring. This is where you set a high or low initial offer to influence the other side's perception of what's reasonable.
So if I'm selling something, I'd start with a price that's higher than what I'm actually willing to accept.
Right. This sets the bar high and makes any subsequent offer seem like a better deal.
Okay.
Voss also recommends using non-round numbers.
Okay.
They feel more specific, less arbitrary, and make people less likely to haggle.
So instead of offering $1,000, I should offer $987.
Precisely. It sounds counterintuitive, but it works.
Really?
People assume you've put more thought into it. Let's try a role play.
Okay.
Eyeing the market for a reliable used car, what do you have?
Well, we have this beautiful 2018 Honda Accord. Mm. It's in excellent condition, low mileage, and it's priced to move at
$15,987. $15,987. That seems a bit steep. What's your best price?
Well, I can't go any lower than $14,569. This car is a steal at that price.
I've seen similar cars for less.
I understand your hesitation, But this car has been meticulously maintained. It comes with a full service history. It's been thoroughly inspected. It's practically brand new. Plus, you won't find a car with this level of safety features for a better price.
Okay, you've convinced me. I'll take it for $14,569.
Excellent. You won't regret this decision.
I hope not, but you were very persuasive. You angered me with that initial high price.
Yeah.
And then you made the lower price seem like a bargain by emphasizing the car's unique value.
Exactly. I strategically bent your reality, making you see the value in my offer. But bending reality isn't just about pricing tactics.
Right.
It's also about understanding your counterpart's deeper motivations and beliefs, their religion, as Voss calls it.
That sounds a bit intense. How do you even approach something like that in a negotiation?
It requires active listening, genuine curiosity, and a willingness to see the world from their perspective. Remember that story Voss tells about the farmer who drove his tractor to Washington, D.C. and threatened to blow it up?
Oh, yes. It seemed like an impossible situation.
Yeah.
But the negotiators were able to find a peaceful resolution by understanding his deep-seated beliefs about government policies.
They appealed to his values, his sense of patriotism, his desire to be heard, and that ultimately led to a successful outcome.
That's the power of understanding someone's worldview. It's not about manipulation. It's about finding common ground and building rapport.
Yeah.
And this applies to all sorts of situations, not just hostage negotiations.
It's about recognizing that everyone has their own religion, their set of core beliefs and values that drive their decisions. And once you understand those, you can frame your arguments in a way that resonates with them, even if you don't necessarily agree with their perspective.
Absolutely. It's about building bridges, not walls now. Before we wrap up this part of our deep dive,
okay,
there's one more crucial element of Voss's approach that we need to explore. Understanding your counterpart's bargaining style.
Oh, right. You mentioned that. What exactly does that mean?
So Voss outlines three main bargaining styles.
Okay.
Analyst, accommodator, and assertive.
Okay.
And each style has its own unique characteristics. Recognizing these in yourself and the person you're negotiating with can be incredibly helpful.
So it's like having a cheat sheet.
Yeah, kind of.
To the negotiation game.
In a way, yes. Let's start with the analyst. They love data logic and details.
Uh-huh.
They're methodical, thorough, and want all the information before making a decision.
Sounds like they'd be right at home with a good spreadsheet.
Absolutely. They love to research, analyze, and plan their approach.
Mm-hmm.
They're also pretty risk averse, preferring to play it safe.
So how do you successfully negotiate with an analyst?
Patience is key.
Okay.
Don't rush them or pressure them into a decision before they're ready.
Right.
Be prepared to provide detailed information, back up your claims with evidence,
mm-hmm.
and be willing to answer all their questions thoroughly.
So it's all about appealing to their rational side.
It is, but remember, they're still human.
Yeah.
Build rapport by acknowledging their expertise.
Right.
Showing genuine interest in their perspective, and use labels to validate their concerns.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, what about accommodators?
Okay.
What makes them tick?
Accommodators are all about relationships. They're empathetic, cooperative, and they'd rather maintain harmony than win at all costs.
Okay.
They're great listeners, easy to get along with, and often willing to make concessions to keep things positive.
They sound lovely to negotiate with.
They can be, but don't take advantage of their willingness to compromise.
Right.
Be respectful of their boundaries and make sure any agreement truly benefits both sides.
So it's about finding that balance between building a stronger relationship.
Yeah.
And still advocating for your own needs.
Exactly. And finally, we have the assertives.
Now, assertives sound a bit intimidating.
Yeah.
Are they the ones who try to dominate the conversation and steamroll everyone?
They can be very direct and take charge.
Yeah.
Assertives are confident, value efficiency, are goal-oriented, and often impatient with delays.
Okay, so how do you handle an assertive without getting steamrolled?
Don't back down or let them intimidate you.
Okay.
Stand your ground. Be assertive in return,
mm-hmm.
and be clear about your own needs and boundaries.
Right.
You can use calibrated questions to slow down the conversation.
Yeah.
And don't hesitate to call them out if they're being unreasonable.
So it can be a bit of a power struggle.
It can, but remember, it's not about winning or losing.
Right.
It's about finding a solution that works for everyone involved.
Okay. I'm starting to see how understanding these bargaining styles can be a game changer.
Yeah.
It's like having a secret weapon to anticipate their moves.
Precisely if you're dealing with an analyst. Be ready with your data.
Mm-hmm.
Negotiating with an accommodator. A focus on building rapport and finding common ground.
Okay.
Facing an assertive. be ready to stand your ground.
This entire deep dive has been incredibly insightful.
I'm glad to hear that.
I feel equipped with a whole new arsenal of negotiation tools.
That's fantastic. And remember, the key takeaway from Never Split the Difference is that negotiation isn't about winning or losing.
Right.
It's about understanding the human element, building trust, and finding solutions that satisfy everyone.
Yeah, it's about turning those potentially tense negotiations into collaborative problem-solving sessions.
Exactly. And with that, we've reached the end of your deep dive into the art of negotiation.
I'm leaving this conversation feeling inspired and ready to tackle any negotiation that comes my way. Thanks so much for guiding me through this fascinating material.
It's been my pleasure. Now go out there, negotiate with confidence, and never split the difference.
That's a wrap on this deep dive. Until next time, keep learning, keep exploring, and keep diving deep.